welcome to the 1 Minute Apologist podcast with Dr. Bobby Conway. Today we're going to be talking about when Christian leaders fail.
Welcome to the 1 Minute Apologist.
1 Minute Apologist.
Apologetics seeks to give credible answers to curious questions, to give a defense.
Well, as far back as Adam, we have been screwing things up, us humans, and there's a long line of leaders that have failed in Scripture, from Abraham, David, Solomon, Peter, and several others. Failure is a part of the human story. And so why do we feel so different when Christian leaders like Ravi Zacharias or Carl Lentz or Jerry Falwell Jr., just to name a few, end up falling short? Well, today, Bobby and I, we don't want to pass judgment on others because we have failed as well. We are failures in and of ourselves. And so, frankly, we don't know all the details surrounding what happened. And so we don't even necessarily want to go into some of those details, but we do want to discuss three areas. The areas that we want to discuss today are, does moral failure invalidate the leader's teachings? Does a moral failure mean that they aren't or weren't a Christian? And what does the church's reaction, or what should the church's reaction be to the moral failures of leaders? So, Bobby, before we jump into these, maybe you could just share some of your thoughts about what happened with Ravi Zacharias in that situation.
Yeah, Ravi Zacharias hit a little bit closer to home as a Christian apologist. With Carl Lentz, that was obviously an unfortunate situation. There was obvious disconnect going on in his life, announcing himself as kind of a sports agent in this cover-up. Ravi, when I first started hearing about some of this speculation a few years ago, it really was easy to dismiss. And, you know, that's a nice thing about your esteem of somebody when you hear something and you find yourself thinking, that can't be the case. I would never have suspected this. What happened was, is as further investigation started going down, I was getting information behind the scenes because I'm well connected to the Christian apologetic community,
right,
that, you know what, there might be some legitimacy here. And we kept quiet, kind of waiting to see what would happen. And then we know that the news came out recently from RZIM confirming that there has been misconduct. And that has obviously been something that more info is now coming out. We're still waiting for more of the public detail to come out, that there's been a lot of look into it. And so it's unfortunate. It's sad. It's expected in this fallen world that these types of things happen. I think the confusing part so much is Ravi's never presented himself as somebody even remotely capable of this kind of behavior. And so that creates an extra disconnect. Like,
right,
it seems as if he almost had a Billy Graham-esque kind of reputation.
Yeah.
And I think that threw everybody an extra curveball, because we can realize how detached his public image was from his real personal experience.
Yeah.
And so that is a very difficult thing. And my heart personally goes out to RZIM, to the family, and to all those who've been affected by
it. Yeah, definitely. So there's lots to talk about here. So let's dive into this kind of first question here. Does a moral failure of a leader invalidate a leader's teachings? And in full disclosure, we all fail. You were in that category. So let's talk a little bit about that. Tell us some of that story, and then we'll kind of dive into this initial question here.
Yeah. You want me to talk a little bit about, like, when I had my relapse?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. That was an unfortunate moment for me. You know, I feel like talking about something, anytime somebody has a failure, while I can't relate, thank God, to some of the things that were happening with a Ravi or a Carl Lentz, knowing the joy and fruitfulness of being a faithful husband, I know what it's like to have had a relapse.
Yeah.
And, and I look at that and I go, yes, I am an alcoholic. I've got a broken brain as it relates to alcohol, but I'm still ultimately accountable for my action.
Right.
And I hate that happened. I'm extra sympathetic anytime I hear that somebody, fell in a particular way, because I know what it feels like to have that shame, that guilt, that sense of God just hold me through a tough time. And so while I look at this as a different situation, you know, like I do share, it's probably hard for people to even understand when it comes to like a drinking, but when you're an alcoholic, you can actually just end up inebriated and you didn't even set out to do it.
Right.
So I think for me, the sin is with the first sip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I was experiencing, because I didn't have a sip of alcohol in almost 23 years. So I was thinking maybe I was just young, dumb, stupid kid and maybe I could drink. And I was going through a tough season in life, really difficult. There was some family stuff that was really painful and hard. I was struggling with some anxiety. And I just thought, boy, it'd be nice to have a glass of wine just to kind of assuage the angst at the end of the day. And I thought, well, maybe I could be self-controlled in the drinking endeavor like everybody else around me, you know, that I saw drinking. And it just didn't work out that way. Mm. As a result, you know, I can say I'm so thankful that I haven't had a sip since
that
relapse.
Praise God.
That's awesome. You know, I got back on track and my wife and kids were there for me. But all that to say, does it invalidate your teaching? No, I don't think it does invalidate your teaching. What invalidates your teaching is if you're teaching heresy.
Right.
Okay. But you can be in hypocrisy and still be teaching truth, but hypocrisy is you're teaching something that you're not living in alignment with.
Right.
And I think if we're honest as believers, there's an element of hypocrisy in all of us.
Yeah.
I think that now that chasm can get wider and longer for some, but none of us live perfectly consistent. In other words, to be a person who has no hypocrisy in our heart means that our teaching and our living are perfectly in alignment.
Right.
And man, I know you'd say the same thing, Tim, like, that's just not the case for any of us.
Right, exactly.
Now, there are these moral failures, though, that become just so egregious. So I'd say, well, what do you do in this situation? Well, I think we can look and go, man, Ravi did bless the world with great teaching. I mean, that doesn't invalidate the teaching, nor does it invalidate the fact that he was gifted. He was a great orator, a poet, a wordsmith, and he blessed the world with wonderful, gifted teaching. I do think it's going to be harder for people to want to listen to him. And that's why radio shows, you know, K-Wave out in California, there's all kinds of radio shows that are removing his stuff. And that's just because they feel like the inconsistency was so bad that they are, you know, removing it on that stand.
Yeah.
On that stance.
Yeah. Maybe move the mic a little bit closer to your mouth there. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Someone just mentioned that. So, yeah, we are going to talk in a few minutes a little bit more about the church's response in at large, how that should be, and reflecting back on some of your story, and just a little more of empathy with Ravi's family and his circumstance. But before we get to that, we do want to talk about, does a moral failure mean that they aren't or weren't a Christian? So, What should we say? I mean, there's going to be critics that are coming out and saying maybe Ravi Zacharias was never saved, and maybe, you know, Carl doesn't really know the gospel, and you know, Jerry Falwell Jr., they just didn't even understand. How can you live in such sin when you've had this, you know, firsthand personal experience with the risen Jesus Christ? How can you square that circle in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough thing. So, for example, you know, we don't know people's hearts.
Right.
And I think ultimately, each person is accountable before God. I think that there's not going to be anybody in heaven who hasn't been there because they could say they weren't forgiven of a lot. Everybody that gets to heaven is going to have been forgiven of a ton. You know, we learn about the parable of the sower, you know, that, you know, some of the seed bears fruit on the good soil, 30, 60, 100 fold. So there's this trajectory by which people bear different fruit in their life. We have seasons where we're bearing more fruit in our own life than in others. I think that what is scary with this is it never came out, and so there was something going on here where you're living completely disconnected to reality. You're just, you know, living in this. This was something that, unfortunately, it seems was going on for quite some time.
Yeah.
And so there's this obvious disconnect. And, one of the things that I read was that he kind of, reasoned that he'd been traveling a lot. And so with the spa situation that, hey, it was okay for him to be able to, have kind of these moments because he'd been busy doing ministry. And, we can talk ourselves into a lot of things. We can deceive ourselves.
Yeah.
And we have to be very careful. Deception is something that is powerful. And I've seen deception at work in my own life throughout my walk with God and before.
And me as well, yeah.
And so I think that as far as like, do I expect that I would see Ravi in heaven? Well, I would never question his salvation on this. I just would think he'd be really out of touch on this. Now, there will be, like the three surprises of heaven that C.S. Lewis talked about. You're going to be surprised, number one, to see that there's people there that you didn't think would be there. And then number two, that there's going to be people who aren't there that you thought would be there. And number three, to find yourself there.
Right.
So the three surprises of heaven.
The three surprises. That's awesome. So let's kind of, maybe this is a good time to talk about some of these, kind of other elements that we're going to pull in, maybe before we even get to the church element. What do you think was going through Ravi's mind that he wouldn't come clean? So maybe this is a good subcategory kind of before we get to the church element.
Yeah,
just take us as best as you can from your experience. Maybe through some of that.
Okay. Now as far as my experience, I can honestly say, which I'm thankful for, is I can't relate on that kind of a level.
Yeah.
So my experience and his experience are two different things with this. You're talking about he lived for years with this kind of secret going on in his life. And the question is, why didn't it come out? What was going through his mind? And we can only speculate. It's possible that perhaps he reasoned that, wow, God, just keep this thing undercover and deal with me when I get to heaven.
Right.
Because if this comes out due to how massive of a ministry I have, this is really going to create a mess. And it certainly has.
Yeah.
And it's going to create a lot of disillusionment. And it has that too. And it's going to hurt his family. And it has certainly done that. So I would say it's possible that maybe that was the way he was thinking that, you'd want to say, well, you'd feel better if this was stuff that was found out that maybe happened years ago. That might reinforce this narrative I'm putting up. But when stuff was coming out even a couple years ago and trying to quiet things down, that makes it look like maybe there wasn't the kind of brokenness there wasn't the kind of brokenness, obviously. But it's sad to just see, and it's just a reminder. I think about that song by Casting Crowns, it's a slow fade.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that we all, every one of us, I genuinely am not just sitting there like throwing stones at Ravi Zacharias. If anything, it scares me as an individual. I think we should all be like, Lord, protect our hearts. This is scary stuff. I mean, you could be seeing salvations all across the world. You can be absolutely seeing life change. And see, that's the other thing. God can still bless people through us in spite of us.
Yeah.
And so sometimes people look and they go, oh my goodness, God's blessing must be on that person. Well, sometimes God's just blessing people because he blesses his truth that goes out and people are blessed. But I would say at the end of the day, we have to remember where we find our hope, and that is in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great reminder, and a couple people on the chat have said that as well, that we need to only lean on Jesus, and so when we put our we put our salvation, when we put our hope in these leaders, these people that are up front, or the people that are authors behind these pages, inevitably they're going to fail. They're going to fail us.
Yeah.
And so continuing to put it in front of Jesus is
exactly. Think about David. I mean, David is called a man after God's own heart.
Right.
Yet he committed these egregious sins with Uriah and Bathsheba. Think about Peter. Peter underestimated his ability to sin. On the night that Jesus was handed over, Jesus said before the rooster crows, these three times you're going to deny me.
Right.
Three times. And what does Peter say? No way, I could never do that.
I'll never do that, right.
On the same night, he does that. So in other words, there's this disconnect between what our human heart is capable of, and what we think. And so take heed when we think we're strong, lest we fall.
Right, right.
But then what does Jesus do? Number one, what I love about Jesus is, like, while the disciples all scattered from him and left him hanging, when Peter was left in his shame, what does Jesus do? He comes to him. And he says, do you love? And that's what he does in the Garden of Eden. God comes after Adam and Eve. Satan takes off, but God pursues us.
Right.
People will run away from you in a heartbeat. You'll find out who your true friends are when you have a moral failure.
Yeah.
People will run away. But Peter has Jesus come, and Jesus says three times, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? On the third time, you know what Peter says? You know all things. Mm. In other words, Lord, you know that I love you. Well, at the same token, I denied you.
Right.
And isn't it, there's something about us as humans that we have this capacity to love God and yet deny the God we love.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that is something that as you understand your sinfulness and as you understand the grace of God is continuing to be astounding to me, just that those two poles that you said.
Yeah.
Another area that we, again, want to be empathetic with is maybe how does a person heal who has a loved one who has died and then finds out something like this? Because, that is different. You were talking to me a little bit about, again, your situation, and we'll just try to tie this back as best as we can, even though it's not perfectly identical. So how would you counsel someone, or how would you pastor someone through that? They come to you and they say, "Man, I found this out that my husband was, I didn't find out, but my husband was abusing me, or my wife was abusing me, or that there's this grave moral situation, this grave sin, and they suddenly passed away, and there was no chance to be able to confront them or reconcile with them or do any of that. How would someone take a next step with that?"
This is so painful. I mean, we got to just try and be empaths and stand in the shoes of, Robbie's family, who have recognized that there has been gross sexual misconduct that has happened. I mean, there's no conversation, right? I mean, the Robbie's wife can't sit down and just say, "Why did you do this?" I had somebody call in recently on the pastor's perspective, and the lady and her children were just reeling with, how do we heal when her husband had died and he was abusive and he never asked for forgiveness? You know, that's a whole other batch of pain. When somebody won't apologize for wrongdoing, you can know this, your healing process is going to be a lot longer. When somebody asks us for forgiveness and validates our pain, we can heal quicker. But when somebody refuses to do that, they leave us stuck in our pain. Now, when somebody dies, you lose the hope of that completely.
Yeah.
And so now you can imagine what the family, they're struggling with disillusionment, the feeling of betrayal, and no sense of being able to talk. And for that reason, my heart so deeply goes out to them. And I would say the beautiful thing, though, about the gospel is the gospel can heal any situation. The Zacharias family needs our prayers. RZIM needs our prayers. They're reeling through a lot.
Yeah.
And they need our compassion, we just need to be really praying that God will help the RZIM organization heal, to move ahead. I think that there's a lot of discussion going on, too, it sounds like, with making sure there's full disclosure and accountability with the board. It seems like there's been some discussion points that are there, really pressing to make sure that the full story comes out. And that's understandable, but just be praying for RZIM would be my heartbeat, and that the Lord would heal.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's move to kind of this last large umbrella area, and I think that will encompass kind of our third main point that we wanted to talk about. And that last one is, what should the church's reaction be to moral failures of leaders? And kind of with that, we can wrap in this idea of judgment. What sort of judgment the church teach for leaders, particularly in the situation of Ravi, where he has passed away and there hasn't been that reconciliation to the church, or hasn't been that kind of confession. So maybe we can, kind of talk broadly about what the church's next step would be because I think a lot of people have experienced that. There was just someone on the chat that said that that kind of happened to them, where their leader of their church was in a similar situation. A number of us have been affected just by, again, the situation with Ravi. So how would the church kind of step forward, mm-hmm. and what would they do?
I think there's a number of thoughts here. Okay, so anytime a leader falls, we still need to remember, number one, that God is on his throne. The Bible lets us know, if there's anything the Bible lets us know about our humanity, is that we are humans, we are fallible, that humans will fall. And we all are capable of this. I think that being aware of that, so that we're just not to protect ourselves from being so utterly and completely disillusioned.
Yeah.
Okay. I would say another thing is in this situation is we do need to be on the outside being prayerful as a community as they go through this. In the example of Carl Lentz, for example, he's still alive. And so you have one example where he's still alive. He's been terminated. We understand exactly why on that particular situation that took place. Ravi, the accountability is in God's hands. He's passed on, but what's left is now for the leadership to think about the best way to move RZIM forward. I know that there's people calling for a changing of the name of RZIM, and that's what's sad, because had Ravi been alive and he had dealt with this and asked for forgiveness and made a public apology, what could have happened in that is there could have been keeping some of the name intact. So I would say, as people, we need to just all learn to have a spirit of grace, though, when failure happens. The gospel is there, and it can model grace. I think about, even in my own situation, I was thankful to have the opportunity to get the word out. What was so difficult was I just wanted to wait 1 week to get the word out, because we were empty nesting our daughter. And the announcement went out to the church, and I said, I'd like 1 week so we could drop our daughter off. We're in California,
right.
And then we'll come back. And I wanted to be there with the body and talk about that. But that didn't happen. And so I can say that that has been complete cancel culture in my experience with that past leadership. And it was incredibly painful. It's like you don't even exist anymore. And I think that's a way that you don't want to handle it. There's a sense of self-rightness that we stand together and you just write somebody off. I don't think that's the gospel at all. I think the gospel should love. And so as we think about this board, they are being accused of handling things wrongly. Well, I think that we need to pray for the board. I think we need to be, recognize we don't know all the details. It could be difficult. I think they should be fully transparent, for sure. And let's see what happens and see how long that timing takes. But I think at the end of the day, those people that know the people that are on there, don't write them off. Don't cancel them. Realize that the gospel is there for us always to walk in grace.
No, that's good. And I think there's always different situations. There's always, depending on what the actual sin is, how it is handled, what the reaction is. So it's really hard to kind of summarize and categorize exactly what the church should do. But I think entering in, like you said, the situation with grace and forgiveness and trying to move forward is definitely would be the priority. And again, that couldn't happen with Ravi. I hope it happens with other leaders that are in that situation. So any final or closing thoughts? We've kind of wrapped up our three major points. Maybe we can look at the chat while you're thinking in response.
Yeah, life is messy and it can be difficult. And I would say that, we just need to really come together as a church right now and model what it looks like to live out the gospel. And I think that for all of us, when we see a person morally fall, we should examine our own heart. Is my heart slowly drifting from the Lord? God, do I need to be, spending more time with you? Am I taking my walk for granted? Am I holding the sacred a little bit too loosely and casually? What can I do about that? And then I think so we're examining ourselves. And then we need to also ask, do I sit in judgment on people where I just cancel people off and write people off? Because the damage can be done on both sides. The prodigal can cause a lot of damage with their prodigal living, but the elder brother can cause a lot of damage in sitting in judgment and harshness and just writing people off. And I think that the picture that we should all strive for is the compassionate father. That's what we want to aim at. We want to be like the compassionate father in the story of the prodigal son. The compassionate father ran out to meet the prodigal on his way home. What do the elder brothers do? They sit in judgment.
Right.
They won't even come out and celebrate that there's actually been transformation. They missed the whole fact that this person went away, came back, and there's been transformation.
Right.
And I think that is sad. And I think what we should look for now is for God to work in RZIM, for God to work in Carl Lentz. And we should ask God, bring transformation. Bring transformation to RZIM as an organization and be glorified through this in some way. And maybe it's just being glorified in that there's that we're all learning how to model the gospel better in our life. We're getting real. Like, why wasn't Ravi real with people? Like, we got to be able to find people to be real with. Yeah. Now, nothing's more devastating when you try to be real with people and then they can't handle you being real. That'll also make people to want to be more secretive. And so who knows, maybe he was disillusioned with people in the past or what have you, but there's so much that goes on in this kind of stuff and we don't know all the details.
Right, yeah. So I think that's good. We didn't hit all of the details of this, but I hope that gives some of Bobby's perspective, some of my perspective on the situation and really how we can continue to move forward. So Bobby, thank you so much for insight, for your vulnerability, for your humility in this. And I had a great chance to just sit here and learn a lot. So thank you so much for all of you that checked out this live broadcast, and we will see you on the next broadcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with your friends and giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Also, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/oneminuteapologist.